Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for Group, and today we have reached our first milestone for the podcast, 10 whole episodes. It has been awesome so far, and I'm really looking forward to closing out the end of the year strong with some great episodes and guests for you guys. And for this very special episode, we are joined by Nicole Pike, the Esports Global Research and Product Lead, plus the VP of the Games Consulting piece for Nielsen. And we're going to be focusing on all things data in esports, from what can we learn about how sponsors are valued in the market, the state of the often conflicted viewer stats, and everything in between. Nicole, thank you very much for jumping on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be part of the 10th episode.
It was great to meet you at Leaders a few weeks back. What were your thoughts on the event? There were lots of panels that I seem to remember you having to jump on at the last minute. How did everything go for you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. So I moderated a couple of panels at the esports specific portion, which I believe was new to the Leaders London conference this year. And it was exciting to see so many people come in a day early to sit and hear a number of panels that were just all esports back to back. And I think the people that attended that got a lot of great insight from some really great thought leaders and participants in the industry. And then it was exciting to, like you said, kind of jump in last minute at the main track of Leaders the following day and moderate the one esports specific panel that they had with three really great panelists, a couple of folks from Teams as well as Sundance, who is with MLG Activision, always entertaining on the panels. So yeah, there was great reception. I think it was actually standing room only in that session, which I know you were at as well, Joe. So cool to see so many folks on the traditional sports side really showing a lot of interest and just trying to learn everything they can about everything esports right now, which obviously there's a lot going on. So one panel's not going to give them all that, but hopefully it was a good primer for those that are looking to get into things a little more.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting journey over the last 2 or 3 years specifically. We're starting to see more teams, brands and organizations that are starting to take esports slightly more seriously. And I think that the dynamic that played out on stage was quite an interesting kind of litmus test for where the industry's at and how business is done in a slightly different way. Just looking at the personalities on stage and their conduct there and how that was received. It was either loved or not despised, but there were quite a lot of people in the feedback afterwards that were like, I'm not sure if these esports people are ready to play the game. But at the same time, it was awesome to have all of the people in the room there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They definitely showed their passion one way or another and their competitive nature in a couple of instances. So yeah, entertaining, yeah, if nothing else.
Multiple references to page 17 of your
page 19. Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly.
Cool.
That was good fodder.
Cool. So before we get started into the details of what you guys have been up to in the space and your view on where we're moving in the future and what we can do to improve across a variety of areas, it would be great to hear your story, your history as a gamer, and also how you came to identify esports as a high potential vertical for Nielsen as a whole.
Absolutely. So I guess first, my personal story as a gamer. I think the first memory I have of gaming is begging my mom to take me to the library so I could sit and play Oregon Trail for hours on end. We didn't have it on our own computer at home. I think she secretly liked me getting out of the house a little bit. So it was a good, like, we're not going to buy it. You can just play at the library as much as you want. So definitely kind of the PC game side of things when I was younger. We weren't as much a Nintendo household back in the day, though. Now my household with a 3.5-year-old has, you know, the old school Wii and Mario Kart that he begs me to play on a daily basis. So we've made our journey along those lines. But yeah, over the years, so I'm sure many folks, especially in the States, you know, kind of evolved from more of a PC gaming side of things to console. So we are a PlayStation household, have had, you know, PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 now. My husband and I are kind of into more of the popular games. So we, you know, we play a lot of FIFA. He's big into Call of Duty, any racing game we're really into. So super competitive, and that kind of shows through in the types of things we buy, and especially things we can play together as well as online.
Did you point out esports as an area that you're going to throw some energy into?
Yeah, so my background at Nielsen is really the past 10 years I've spent leading our North American video game consulting and research groups. So I have been working for, like I said, 10-ish years now with mainly endemic folks, clients on the game side. So hardware manufacturers, software publishers, service accessory providers, those sorts of companies, trying to help them develop their strategy and how to talk to consumers, how to market their products, how to go out with a launch of a new product, and helping to project sales, forecast sales of new product introductions in the gaming space, that sort of thing. So have always been very, from a professional standpoint, dialed into all the hot topics and things going on in the gaming space. And certainly, as you know, you work with clients, they start to, just as the broader industry does, move into new things. And quickly, you know, the past 3 years or so, esports kind of became more and more top of mind. We started doing some ad hoc research for our clients on the subject, and then that really dovetailed nicely with Nielsen's acquisition of a company called Repucom, which is known for its sponsorship valuation in the traditional sports space. And just as we on the game side, we're starting to get more inquiries on esports, they were getting the same from more of the sports side and brands, rights holders, that sort of thing. And really, we kind of, you know, as part of the integration, quickly realized, hey, we're all working in esports. Let's take a look and see what the opportunity is here as Nielsen. I feel like whenever, you know, Nielsen wants to move into a business, we want to make sure that we have the right opportunity and that there's a spot for us to, you know, have a voice and provide something useful and differentiated in that space. And we really looked at what we had in esports across games and sports and said, hey, we've got something. And more importantly, we have clients who want our opinion and our perspective on it. And they value what we as Nielsen, a third-party company, have to say. So once it was a confluence of clients being interested, the obviously growth of the industry that we saw, and what we felt like were our competitive advantages from a product perspective, we felt like that was the right mix to jump in and really start a dedicated practice toward esports.
Awesome. Very, very cool. And I think it's precisely the right time, and I also think from the viewer side, being able to package that in a very transparent and easy to digest way is only going to help build up a clearer picture of what the esports viewer, fan, and consumer actually looks like, what their attitudes are towards brands and non-endemic actors, so that we can start to build on the foundation which everyone else has laid in the esports industry over the last 8 to 10 years. Awesome. So that brings us on to the first question or area that we wanted to focus in on, and that was the state of esports viewing data as a whole. Mm-hmm. Do you think the narrative of the esports fan and you know where they're active in the market is clear? And also, how do you think the publishers and teams will be better able to commercialize on the data that's already out there?
Yeah, good question. So I think if it was clear, and especially if it was crystal clear, we wouldn't have said that we had a voice to put out in this space. So I definitely think that there's an opportunity to bring a lot more clarity to a number of things within esports, but definitely focusing on this specific point to the idea of, you know, who the audience is and how big it is. And, you know, from our perspective, there's a few different ways to think about that, none of which are easy, but all of which I think are important to consider going into things. So there's certainly, you know, the viewership side, which obviously right now esports broadcast is extremely proliferated. It's global, and that obviously creates its own challenges in terms of the number of different sites that are showing any particular event, and then across mobile, online, TV, but also just the fact that right now there's still so many events that even within one particular country are being shown on so many different channels. And so being able to just very easily say, okay, this is our viewership base, and therefore this is the size of the esports base, is just an extremely, extremely difficult thing. And I imagine we'll talk about some of that stuff in a little more detail later on as well. But just that whole idea of using viewership to size, in theory, it's great. In practice, it's so difficult to understand, the deduplication and overlap and things across all different sources. So that's one piece of things. But another thing that we're starting to see more within esports that I think is important is really thinking about the fan base outside of just those that are like the hardcore viewers, because, Nielsen, we have a lot of experience in understanding the fan across all different forms of entertainment, and of course, sports specifically. And what you see is that, a lot of people, I think of the esports fan as these hardcore people that are watching, 30 hours a week of esports content, which definitely that is the core base. And those are the people that, started from day one and are really building with the industry. But there's also a lot of folks that are just kind of starting to follow things a little bit, whether it's through some of the TV programming that's starting or starting to kind of get engaged in a game, and then kind of keep track of what's happening on the professional scene. And from our standpoint, we definitely want to understand those people's journey and consider them as fans too. And so that's not necessarily looking at, the folks viewing all the time, but also all the other content that's being consumed around esports, especially since so much more of that is, being released and created these days, and trying to follow that as well as all the social engagement. So I think from our standpoint, looking at and trying to measure the audience, we also are looking to take those things into account too, to make sure we're really getting a holistic view of who the esports audience is and what all the touch points they have with the industry are beyond just watching live events.
Sure. And I feel like that the title specific narrative of how each individual fan in a separate game might engage with the space in a completely different way, like I think that that's really important as well. One of the more recent examples that I'm looking at from a personal perspective is the League of Legends World Championships. I've been introducing one or two friends into it, and they've started playing a few games and actually really starting to enjoy it and actually appreciate the kind of strategic and tactical breakdown. But when I've been asked the question of how many people are actually watching this game right now, we've gone over onto Twitch, onto YouTube, and we've kind of put together these massive numbers, but just because of the World Championships being in China means that it's actually really, really hard for us to understand how many people are actually watching and how they're engaging. So that's one obstacle that I guess the industry as a whole, from a Western perspective, is going to have to step forward and work on in the future, because it's just so hard to get any transparency in those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we, as part of the launch of our esports vertical this year, we developed our Nielsen Esports Advisory Board, and we have folks from really a number of most of the key players in the esports space, especially on the broadcast side of things. And one of the things that we're working to do is just talk through, number one, from an industry standards perspective, like what makes sense in terms of how to understand the total viewership and audience ratings and measurement across all the different sources and globally. Because to your point, I think one of the really tricky things about esports, especially if I'm putting my Nielsen hat on and thinking about audience measurement from a TV ratings perspective in esports, I mean, your League of Legends example is perfect. The event's going on in China right now, so chances are there's a number of people in North America that aren't watching live because they're sleeping. Now, some people are getting up and are super fans and are doing it, but others of us have to work, and so we'll catch up the next morning. So when that happens, the non-live viewing becomes much more relevant than maybe it is in the traditional sports space, especially, right, where I think we see a lot of esports content live on in VOD and being consumed in some pretty large amounts. And that standpoint that you just don't see as much when you've got more of a linear broadcast, very region specific kind of leagues and that sort of thing. So issues and things like that are things that we are talking through with our advisory board to kind of think about what's the best way, and what should we as Nielsen and esports as an industry be looking at as like the proper standard to measure these things? I think that's going to be really important. And then we're also just talking through from a technical perspective, right? Like what it takes to be able to get this measurement. Again, Nielsen does it on the TV side. We have digital ratings products as well, but esports is certainly different in terms of the number of different online sites that are showing things at any given time, you know, the type of programming in terms of we still don't have a TV guide for esports, right? We don't know when certain matches are going to start and stop. And so the predictability around things becomes difficult. And that just from a measurement perspective makes things more challenging, not impossible by any means. And that's the things we're looking into right now.
Yeah, that last point's definitely one of the teething issues of the industry that we really have to move away from. You know, I throw around the phrase professionalization in pretty much every single conversation that I have in this industry, and it's just because there are so many aspects of the space that could do with a hell of a lot more structure and predictability, which is why seeing on the franchise side, seeing the future implementation of the BAMTech deal over in the world of League of Legends and having full control over that broadcast, and also understanding what is going to be happening with the Overwatch League too, perhaps these kind of evolutions into how the broadcast is actually put forward will elevate the rest of the space too, to kind of act on the same standard, which will definitely make the commercials or sponsorship and partnerships actually be a lot more certain. You know, if you are looking for a key slot with a certain audience, you know, if that time frame, you know, isn't even guaranteed, then that's not exactly ideal. So yeah, that's just my thoughts on that. Cool. So we didn't really touch on how to commercialize from the publisher and team side. So looking at Nielsen being a kind of thought leadership and consulting body, where do you feel like improving these metrics and these and the clarity around the industry will actually enable esports as a whole to start to activate in a more mature way?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the goal. And I think we saw that a lot in kind of getting the groundwork laid for our vertical. That was part of the reason that we decided that it made sense for us to really enter the space, is we're getting questions from rights holders or tournament coordinators saying, we need to be able to prove that there's the value that we say there is and that we know and feel there is in esports sponsorship. And then on the brand side, really them saying, we need to understand what, you know, what's in it for us and why. You know, one of the questions we hear a lot from brands is, why should I be taking my money from somewhere that I've been spending it in the sponsorship realm and in some place within entertainment, and move it to esports? Am I going to get the return? Is this a safe investment? And then if I do it, how? Like it's esports. I don't know much beyond that. Where do I place my money, and how much should I be paying for a sponsorship, depending on what it is? So there's so much of a chicken and egg going on in the industry right now, I feel, where there's a lot of interest, as we saw at Leaders and as we see from everything going around, all the numbers and articles and things. There's a ton of interest, but feeling that it's safe and feeling that there's a way to keep things accountable, I think are two big things that we're seeing. So we absolutely felt like developing some of this underlying data, especially around the value of sponsorships within esports, is going to be really important and key and to helping the industry grow and really bringing in, especially those non-endemic brands that I think we all know and have seen the potential for, that just haven't quite made the leap in, and maybe the amounts are at least as quickly as maybe we all would have expected 2 years ago.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've been focusing on recently. I mean, we had the episode with Imari Oliver from WMEIMG speaking all about the gap between brands and endemic organizations. And then we had the follow-up piece from the endemic side with James Grunke, the former global head of esports for NVIDIA, trying to understand the gaps in expectation and understanding has been a crucial talking point of the industry so far, and will continue to be so over the next 18 months to 2 years, really, as esports tries to pitch itself as a safe set of hands for non-endemic brands and also for the brands themselves to be able to understand how the esports industry and teams and organizations and influencers themselves can build up a really personal narrative and strong connection with the fans, which is pretty much unfound anywhere else in sports and entertainment.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that in kind of talking with people who aren't as familiar with esports in more of an intimate industry specific way, they know what it is, they know it's growing, but kind of, you know, what makes esports unique? And that's one of the first things I say is the level of fan engagement and interest and really their desire and appetite to consume content outside of the live events is amazing. And if you can create that contact or content that connects with the fan in a meaningful way, they'll watch it, they'll consume it, they'll watch it while they're streaming live events, they'll look for it elsewhere, they'll be following social channels. I feel like in some cases more than maybe you'd see on the traditional sports side, though there's certainly those relationships and fans there as well. But it's an extremely passionate base that I think is very excited about the fact that there is some broader kind of mainstream interest in esports and understands that, you know, part of money coming into the industry and, you know, fueling and growing their passion is going to take some, support from folks outside of just the esports industry or gaming industry themselves. So they get that, but they just want that to be in an authentic way that at the end of the day is going to give them something that they're interested in. And if that happens, then I think there's definitely the opportunity for these non-endemic brands to come in and carve a niche with and speak to these fans that are, you know, if they appreciate it and it's the right content are then gonna, you know, serve that back and you know, create that relationship with them. So I think it's an exciting time.
I was reading that in your report, actually. I was actually quite surprised to see how enthusiastic fans across the core markets of the US, the UK, France, and Germany were when pitched a question of kind of looking at, do they want esports to change with non-endemic brands actually stepping in? And it is 100%, if it's done in the right way, then absolutely, let's go for it. Awesome. So we have talked at the higher level slightly on everything that we can do to improve the industry from a data perspective, but there are obviously some major obstacles as well in the industry at the moment. We've got some endemic actors that are doing great work, like Newzoo, that are more responsible around the macro data, and the Esports Observer do awesome stuff around shedding more light on the company landscape through hard insight and actually media as well as doing some polling around engaged esports fans and what their thoughts are on the industry. What's the largest obstacle that esports faces from a data perspective right now, and how can we overcome that in the future?
Yeah, so I think in terms of the largest, I think we actually touched on it a little bit earlier, and I'm probably, you know, coming from a very Nielsen perspective right now, but I think it's absolutely just the broadcast measurement audience side of things, and I'm hoping that we as Nielsen will help to be the ones that improve that. But I just think kind of this, you know, for folks investing in traditional sports teams or being sponsors or that sort of thing, there's a very clear, this is how many people are fans, this is how many people are watching. You can see the TV ratings from one week to the next. It's very transparent. And so if you're a sponsor, it feels very safe because there's a way to check what the return is going to be. And I think the lack of that right now in esports and really just kind of relying on these giant numbers of this is what revenue is going to be for the industry in 2020. It's not, you know, it gets a lot of interest and excitement and, you know, it turns heads, but that doesn't necessarily make people feel safe in putting their dollars in the industry. So I continue to think that that's the biggest gap. And especially when you start to think about, the brands and the entities that are looking to invest and just the fact that, you know, some are global, and especially for global brands, like what better than a type of entertainment that is reaching people globally with one broadcast? I mean, that piece of things is absolutely amazing, but in order for esports to grow as a sponsorship business, I think it definitely needs to reach and has started to outside of global brands and starting to look a little more regionalized. And when that's the case, there's a lot less data available right now around, you know, what is the actual audience for European League of Legends versus, you know, if this the World Championships this, you know, this month, what, you know, how, what percent of the audience is coming from China versus the States versus, you know, Western Europe versus Australia. There's a lot, there's a lack of data on regionality, I think, right now. And if you're a sponsor that speaks primarily to one region of the world, I think the data that's out there right now, you probably have the sense that it's being, that it's overstating what the potential is for you to really make a return back on things in terms of reaching the right audience. And so I think that's a trend that you're going to see, and that certainly we as Nielsen are looking at as well, is trying to better understand, you know, what the landscape is across some of the different regions. And I think some of the, you know, regional franchise you know, leagues that were starting to come out are also going to speak to that a little bit, right? Like giving the opportunity to invest in a team that is going to be a little more region or in some cases city specific. And so then you start to kind of think about talking to even more of the target that you're after. But I think that's one of the, you know, biggest gaps right now that I hope we can help to solve in the near future.
Yeah, that's one of my major concerns or worries or kind of reservations about the European scene is just how fragmented and how inconsistent it is. You know, if you look at the UK market, we've had Rob Black on from the ESL UK speaking about this in one of our earlier episodes, but we were talking about how strong the UK market is from a viewer perspective, but just how weak we are on the actual talent side and how the kind of events that we're actually putting together are still pretty weak. It's, you know, it's one of the things that I would love to see happen with the Overwatch League and with other franchising models, is actually building up these ecosystems and these organic markets around these core products that will start to just make more inroads for sponsors, for fans in their bedrooms that actually just want to work in the space, or everyone who's involved, you know. And the more that we can fill out the rest of the pyramid rather than the top 2 or 5% with grassroots organizations and grassroots flows of people being active, like, I think that's only going to elevate the space to a higher standard. It's one of the things I'm really looking forward to keeping an eye on over the next year or so as these structures are started. Sorry, my words are just not working at the moment.
I get what you're saying completely. Yeah. And yeah, I think, you know, when you look at, again, kind of thinking about the esports fan base and comparing that to the traditional sports fan base, like there are different tiers in terms of engagement level and casual fans versus, you know, super engaged fans. And I think especially when you think about the more mainstream traditional sports have a very large casual fan base that are, you know, either connected because they have a regional alliance or, you know, a team within their city that they're really passionate about, or they know people who are really engaged. And so they have kind of gotten in from a periphery side of things too. And I think some of that regionalization of esports and kind of building some of those foundations within different countries or, you know, areas of the world, I think that's going to help to expand that. And of course, you know, it would be great if everyone was that hardcore consuming 30 hours a week type person, but that's not how you're going to ultimately grow the fan base to start to rival some of these other sports that are out there. You have to have ways for people to engage in a not so intense way. And I think that is one opportunity to really make that happen. So I'm super excited to see how that goes too, especially, you know, obviously Overwatch League launching soon, but with all the events still being played in California in the first year, I'm actually excited for year two. Of course, we've got to get through year one, and I'm excited for that too. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, once we start to see what happens when people are playing on the ground in their regions, I'm super excited to see what that does to the dynamic of things.
Yeah, I've been using kind of a word or one phrase per year to kind of summarize where the industry's at. It's been education, this year, non-endemics last year, and I think next year it's just going to be learn and adapt, because there's going to be so many new esports propositions being put together. There's going to be a hell of a lot of trial and error on the structural side, on the team org side as well. So super excited to see where that goes. Let's dive deeper into the commercial piece for a second. Obviously, we're seeing some really interesting sponsors and partnerships that are moving into the space, principally a lot of car manufacturers with BMW, Mercedes and Audi stepping in. We've had some fashion brands, some mobile media brands step in. Obviously, all of their products have a very different approach to the market, but how difficult is it to value the return on investment from these kind of sponsorships at the moment? Because without a hard call to action from the fans themselves, just placing a logo in a very passive way, you know, it's quite hard to tangibly register the value of that presence. So how is the state of sponsorships at the moment, and what do you feel like could be improved upon from the content side or a macro marketing level?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess first in terms of the measurement and understanding the value and the return on partnerships, there's definitely work being done. And one of the first things that I say is, when a sponsor is getting into the space, is first and foremost, they need to define what their goal is within just to be a sponsor within esports. Because for some, it's very much we're putting this much money in and we have a new product line that's coming out. We've especially seen this on the endemic side of things. We have a new product line coming out. We know this is our target audience and we want this sponsorship to move this many units. That's a very, very tangible, give me numbers kind of thing, which is probably the hardest to measure, right, in terms of tying that to the actual esports fans that are watching. But certainly there's some work being done in that space. But a lot of what we're seeing in terms of why sponsors are getting in the space and ultimately what they want measured isn't necessarily the moving of units. It's more of getting that exposure and basically thinking of it as another form of advertising, or kind of how if we're shifting our dollars away from this type of media, we want to make sure we're getting this type of return or exposure of our brand among the esports audience. And so a lot of what we as Nielsen and really the Nielsen Sports side of our business have been doing is looking at what we call the QI media value for sponsorships, which is basically equivalizing the exposure that brands are getting based on the live broadcast, obviously the audience size for particular events, but then also looking at how much exposure a particular brand gets on the screen over the course of a broadcast. And looking at what that equivalized media value is to be able to say, this is the dollar value that you get out of that exposure, which then they can bump up to what they, of course what they paid, but then also kind of what the opportunity cost was from shifting those dollars. I think two things in esports that we are looking at more closely and that I think, will definitely be something to pay more and more attention to is number one, social. So, really looking at, brands certainly get that exposure during the event, but are they getting it elsewhere? And are teams doing a great job of getting their main sponsors exposure elsewhere? I've seen some great examples of teams doing that. I've seen other examples where I'm literally trying to track down what the name of a sponsor is on a jersey for a team. And I have had to actually message a team on Facebook and say, I can't find this brand anywhere related to your team other than this hazy picture. What is it? And they tell me, I'm like, well, you need to have that on your website kind of thing. So there's kind of different levels of, of sophistication in terms of how teams are doing that. But I think, being able to take it beyond the broadcast and find other ways to get your brand's exposure is really important. And then I think the other piece is just really trying to understand and really kind of assess the value of, and we're doing some work to fine tune this on our end, what we talked about earlier, which is that engagement level of the esports fan and really, what is the value of being able to reach this very target targeted audience who's taking their eyeballs away from, traditional linear TV, and it's harder and harder to reach them there. You know, what's the value of being able to reach them in this very engaged setting that they're part of? And so I think that's another thing we're looking at. And then to your point on trends, I mean, original content, I feel like, is the trend. You say you have your different words for each year. For me, content seems to be just an even, it hasn't even been this full year, but like the past 2 or 3 months, there's just been an explosion in the creativity around original content, and really what a handful of teams and leagues and tournament coordinators are doing to really help build up that content beyond just plastering your logo on something. Exactly. And then maybe a social post here and there, but you know, following the team around and integrating things in a more branded way, just doing cool, unique things where you're, you know, interacting with specific team members to add a more personal touch. I mean, there's so much that can be done to build more around kind of like these lifestyle stories, connecting brands to teams or leagues or whatnot. That I think we're just kind of starting to see that take off, and I expect to see a lot more. Next year, especially as we start to get more and more investors from the traditional sports side, and even just people kind of getting involved and taking positions in the esports industry coming from traditional sport. There's obviously a lot of that type of content built into sports broadcasts. And I think we'll see even more of that happen with some of these new leagues popping up this year too. So I'm super excited to see what additional value all that can bring to sponsors.
Yeah, and I think there's a few great examples of brands that have done a great job already. I'm a big fan of HTC's YouTube content. They do some really interesting partnerships with players. Cloud9 also do a great job with kind of blending talent from multiple titles into similar activations. I know that Red Bull did something with TSM and Cloud9 before they shot themselves in the foot and bought a slot in Europe without telling anyone. So there's some interesting original and authentic stuff out there. It's just a case of everyone getting more up to speed on what can actually be done and what can elevate the brand and the team and the publisher perspectives in a mutual situation. I'm so excited to see how the dust settles at the end of next year once all of these trials, all of these experiments, all of these brands have started to get some hard returns on their exposure. Like I'm expecting that, regardless of my personal thoughts about how fun Overwatch actually is to watch, I think it's going to be kicking and screaming into being a really one of the major titles, you know, once they actually fix the observer mode, and the kind of the integration of periphery content around that will be really interesting to see, because there's just been a massive drought on that side, as Overwatch and Blizzard have pulled the plug on a lot of the other tournaments. I feel like we could talk around in circles about looking to the future. Where's the industry going to go? What are the major obstacles, and how can we tell the story of esports in a more transparent and lucid manner? But unfortunately, as always in every episode, we're always running up against the clock. So we've just got time for one more question, which is our recurring piece. This time is called The Ocarina of Time from The Legend of Zelda. Nicole, if you could have any role in esports, any pro-facing role in any esports title, past, present, fantasy, or future, what would it be and why?
Well, I don't know. This feels like it might be a little boring, and it actually, our last kind of part of the discussion led into it, but I'm just obsessed right now with all of the content being created around esports. And I've always wished I was a more creative person than I actually am. Hence why I'm at Nielsen working with data on a day-to-day basis. But I've always, in another life, wished to be someone that could just come up with these like amazing creative ideas that could just run with them. So I think anything around the, creating content, or even just like the filming and the sets of things of some of these events. I think this whole idea of trying to make esports visually attractive and engaging and bringing it, from a visual standpoint to where people beyond people who are really obsessed with a particular game are going to be excited to watch it is a really important kind of piece of how esports is going to evolve. And I am jealous of the people that have the minds that would be able to actually execute that. So I think for me, that's what I would love to do, is be on like the creative production side of things, though I know I personally could never do it. So I'll just have to live vicariously through through the folks that are. And I think in terms of the games to be involved with there, I mean, I'm super excited to see what they're able to do with Overwatch. Obviously, you've got a lot of eyeballs on that, but also a lot of cool stuff around the different characters and you know, the graphic style and all of that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. So I think that would probably be the one I'd want to be involved in. But there's a lot of pressure on it too. So maybe I should be careful what I wish for.
Before you mention Overwatch, I was going to have to push you to choose a title. But you spun it around at the end. Very interesting idea. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with us today. So where can everyone reach you if they want to pop by, if they want to send any feedback, or if they want to get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. Best thing is probably email. So I'm nicole.pike@nielsen.com. I imagine the podcast still have the correct spelling of my name there. And I'm also on LinkedIn with all sorts of esports stuff attached to my profile. So I'm sure you can easily find me there. But yeah, please connect. I love to talk esports, especially to people who are genuinely curious and or have a lot to say about it, because I learn from everyone. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Just one more thing from our side. Everyone who's made it to the end of the podcast, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to jump onto iTunes or to go through your podcast app and leave us a rating and a short review. It really helps the podcast. And you know, our aim by the kind of Q1 of next year is to get us as the number one esports podcast on iTunes, and we can only really do that with all of your help. So leave us 5 stars if you think that all of our guests were awesome. That'd be super helpful. But until next time, this has been the Esports Roundtable. Nicole, thank you very much for coming on, and everyone, we will speak to you very soon.